And good evening again. Welcome to Rabbi Feldman's Tuesday night here. Today is Tuesday, February 20th. Tonight's here is sponsored by David Schachter to commemorate the yahrzeit of his stepfather, Yosef Ben Moshe.
Good evening. Decided that it's time to start talking about perm. So guess this week and next week we'll discuss some perm topics. So one of the most cheerful perm topics is that of Shalach Manos. We know that there are four mitzvos of perm. There's the mitzvah of Sudas Perm, mitzvah of Kriyas and Megillah, mitzvah of Shalach Manos, the mitzvah of Matanos Lev Yonim. And these four mitzvos are all under a heading known as Divrei Kabbalah, which is a topic we've talked about in the past. And they are not quite the races, but they're not quite not. They're mentioned in Sukkim, Sukkim in Megillah's Esther, it's not in Chumash. So that status perhaps is somewhat equivalent to a biblical status. That was the view of the Turi Eben, the author of the Sages Hayyeh. And even though they're Rishonim, who don't seem to take the view, Sagasai's voice was louder, and many poskim do treat these issues of Purim as if they are, for most intents and purposes, biblical in nature. And that being the case, there's quite a bit of discussion that circles around Shalach Manos, and the discussion was very influenced by the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer writing, you know, whatever it was, about 200 years ago, or a tshuva about the topic that was incredibly influential, and so much so that every discussion about Shalach Manos that ever took place since then has followed the path of this Chassam Sofer. And really, the issue started several hundred years earlier in the writings of the Ramah. The Ramah had a psak that was very controversial and provoked a lot of attention. The idea was, the Ramah writes, so let's say I call up my friend, and they say, I'm going to bring you Shalach Manos. And my friend says, wow, that is such a nice thought. That is really terrific. But the fact is, my house is so filled with Shalach Manos, I can't even open the door. You know, why schlep? Stay home. Enjoy a perm. I appreciate it, but you don't have to do much react. So writes the Ramah, that person is now in fulfillment of Shalach Manos. Did what he asked to do. I didn't actually give anything. Doesn't matter. Mechila works. The fact that the person was mocho, that's enough as if he actually gave it. So many of the mafarshim that came afterwards, the Prichadish and others, didn't understand where this came from. So look at my Megillah Sester. It says, Mishloach Manos Yisrayehu. Doesn't say offering Manos Yisrayehu. Mentioning that you have Manos, it says actually giving them. So many poskim didn't really understand the basis for the Ramah's ruling to consider this to be a fulfillment of the obligation of Shalach Manos. So this issue went around for a couple hundred years and it reached the desk of the Chassam Sofer. And the Chassam Sofer approached the issue anew and he said, in order to understand this question, so we have to try to figure out what is Shalach Manos all about. What is the nature of this institution? Why do we have it? So he did a little research, and he dug up that there are two basic theories as to what Shalach Manos is for. Two basic theories to what Shalach Manos is about. On the one hand, there was a Trumas Hadeshen. It was one of the Rishonim. Trumas Hadeshen writes in the Tshuva that the purpose of Shalach Manos is apparently to help out with another one of the mitzvahs of perm. That is the mitzvah of suda. We have a suda on perm. And it may be that not everyone is necessarily in a position to have a suda befitting the chag. So therefore, in order to make sure that it's taken care of, so there is a need to worry about everybody else and to send out Shalach Manos. That was the way the Trumas Hadeshen understood it. The other view is that of the Manos Halevi. The Manos Halevi was written by Shlomo Alkabetz. Shlomo Alkabetz is more famous for writing L'Chadodi. This is a far second on his resume. This is probably the second most famous thing that he wrote. That's far, far second compared to L'Chadodi. But maybe this is number two, because the Chassam Sofer made this very famous, quoting this line. And Manos Halevi was a commentary to Megillas Esther, and in this commentary on the Pesukim of Mishloach Manos, so he explains, why do you have such an institution? Why do we have this mitzvah? This is to counter what Haman had said. Haman said in the beginning of the Megillah that Yeshnayim Echad Mephod Mephod, this is one scattered nation, let's kill them. And our response is, let's not. And you think we're scattered, we're connected. We strengthen our bonds of friendship and of love and of achdus through sending around Shalach Maros. So that, as the Chacham Sofer understood it, constituted two distinct schools of thought as to what exactly was the purpose of Shalach Maros. Is it to help with the Suda, like the Shemesh HaDesha understood, or is it really to make friends, as was the understanding of the Manos HaLevi? So he thought that this question about the Ramah, about it's enough to be most of the Shalach Maros, so he thought it's dependent on these two issues. That if you want to say the second one, so you want to say like the Manos HaLevi, the purpose is to make friends, so then you can make a good case that it's a thought that counts. That if you're trying, if you're offering, so it doesn't matter whether the guy accepts or not, he knows that you put it out there, that's enough. But if the issue is that we want to basically help people with their suda, so then, writes the Chacham Sofer, it doesn't make sense to say that we would allow mechila. Because if we would, the whole institution would fall apart. If we're going to say that the only people who are going to accept this Shalach Maros are the people who need it, and everyone else is not going to accept it, so no one's going to want to accept it. No one's going to want to say they need it. So therefore, everyone's going to turn it down, and the whole institution is not going to get off the ground. Or alternatively, if you want to save yourself time and effort, so just call up your rich friends, say, I've got the Shalach Maros for you, and they'll say, no, it's okay, don't worry, and you're off the hook. So presumably that's not a feasible plan. So the Chacham Sofer says, if that was the reason for the sakana of Shalach Maros, it wouldn't make sense that such a thing could be possible. So this is what the Chacham Sofer taught, that this question, the ruling of the Ramah, is dependent on these two perspectives, dependent on the Manos HaLevi or the Shemesh HaDesha. And for the following 200 years, up as Adi Yom HaZeh, anybody who's ever said anything about Shalach Maros has felt morally bound to attach the issue to these two perspectives. Whatever it is, whatever question anyone has, if you ask, should I use a red basket or a blue basket for my Shalach Maros, so I'll say, well, it depends, and the Manos HaLevi from Sadesha. If you say a red basket, it goes better with your Suda, a blue basket, it's more cheerful. And somehow everything ties in. And there was one lonely voice in the wilderness, the Tshuvas Chelkas HaSada, Blazer Deutsch, who was a contemporary of the Chacham Sofer, I think, if I remember correctly, and he thought the whole thing was really exaggerated. Yeah, he didn't really think there were two distinct schools of thought here. But everyone really agrees that the purpose of Shalach Maros is to make friends. It's just that from the Sadashan had been that since there is an obligation of Sudas Parm, which might be an issue for somebody, so if you're going to give a gift anyway, better it should be a gift of food, because that's what's pressing on that day. But he didn't mean to say that he represents a whole different view. Everyone agrees the purpose of Shalach Maros is really a friendship token. It's just a question of whether the focus has to be specifically on food items because of the issue of the Suda. But he didn't win this debate. The Chacham Sofer's voice was much louder. And everyone who ever talked about this topic ever since assumed this was a central issue. And the Chacham Sofer himself continues the process a little bit by throwing in another question over there. So what should the story be? Let's say you have somebody, whether it's a married woman or anybody else, who's not buying her own meals. She is supported by someone else. So if you're not buying your own meals, presumably you're not obligated to provide the meals for others either. So that was a point that Chassan Sofer wrote, that the Ramah also writes, apparently consistent with his view, that a woman is chayavis in Tzarech Manas, and some of the commentaries in Magen Avraham and others said, really, any woman, maybe you mean a single woman, maybe not a married woman, but Ramah seems to say that a woman is chayavis. And apparently the idea is, because this is consistent with his isha, that he believes that the purpose of Tzarech Manas is like the Manas HaLevi, to make friends. So if it's the purpose to make friends, then men and women are equally obligated. If the idea is sudas, then you can make a case that maybe a married woman isn't providing her own sudas, she doesn't have to provide for anybody else. But if it's about reis, it's about friendship, so that's how you get to the Ramah's position, that applies equally to men and to women. And that, so Sofer continues this whole thread by saying, here's one more issue, which he thought was also dependent on this. And there are other positions that the Ramah writes that seem to flow from this perspective. For example, the Ramah has a ruling there as well. If you look at Purim, there's a big contrast between Purim and Pesach as far as how they're observed. Pesach is a very night-centric yontif. Everything, all the action takes place at night. And Purim is the opposite. Purim is really a day-centric yontif. And even when it comes to Mikra Megillah, which sociologically has been a much bigger deal at night, halachically is a bigger deal during the daytime. The daytime is really when the obligation of Megillah really is. Maybe we'll talk about that next week. We'll see which aspects we want to focus on next week. But the bitzvahs of Purim as a whole are really relevant during the daytime. So presumably this is true about Tzarech Manas also. Tzarech Manas is a mitzvah for the daytime of Purim. So therefore, I said, I'm up. So when you send the Tzarech Manas, you have to make sure the Tzarech Manas gets there not the previous night, not the night of Purim. It's got to get there during the daytime of Purim, because that's when the mitzvah is. So apparently, this is the Ramah L'shitaso. This is the Ramah following his view, because he believes that when do you fulfill the mitzvah of Tzarech Manas? When it's received. Because if the idea is you want to impress the person, you want to make friends, so then presumably it's got to get received on Purim, because that's when the person is impressed. The person is impressed when it lands on their doorstep. And it's nice to make them happy on Hanukkah or on Tu B'Shvat, but the mitzvah of Tzarech Manas is to make them happy on Purim, so it's got to get there on Purim itself. Masha'im Kane, if you're following the view of the Tumas Hadesh, and if the idea is that it's here to help with the Suda, so then presumably it could get there certainly the night before. I'll let it get there the day before. Let it get there before Purim completely, as long as it's still fresh and usable on Purim itself. And in fact, you could go even further. You could maybe even say that it could get there after Purim. What do I mean? There is a tshuva about this, and the tshuva of the Kajig Lavarav, and the Tshuvas Eretzvi, where in general he always takes the approach of being Malamed Chos on the Jews, of trying to figure out why they do what they do, and assuming there's a good reason. So if you notice, so on Purim afternoon you have many people running around giving Tzarech Manas, and sometimes the people are still running around even after it gets dark. So you'll say, what's the point? It's already not Purim anymore. Once it gets dark, it's already Shushan Purim. So what's the point in keeping to deliver the Tzarech Manas even after Purim is over? So says the Kajig Lavarav that this could be working off the following assumption, that many people believe, and they might be correct about this, that they can begin the Suda on Purim, and then even if it continues into dark, it continues into the next day, that doesn't matter, that's still all considered to be Suda's Purim, as long as it started when it was still light outside. And that's very possibly a correct perception. So if that's the case, so then it could be that the Suda's Purim continues into after Purim. So if you show up at somebody's house after dark and they're still holding in Suda's Purim, so you can then give them food which they can use for their Suda's Purim, and therefore in theory it's possible to still contribute to that goal. there was one issue which I thought was maybe free from this whole discussion, so I thought it could be the one issue that doesn't have to get involved with the whole Manasalevi Trumas Hadeshim point, and that was a question that Acharon talked about concerning the issue of Shlichus when it comes to Shalach Manas. We know that there are some mitzvos which are given to a policy of Shlichus, of agency, and there's some mitzvahs which aren't. Some mitzvahs you can't do through an intermediary. And normally, the mitzvahs that we do allow you to do through an intermediary, normally, we still prefer that you don't. We still say, mitzvah bo, yosim v'shlucho, it's preferable for you to do the mitzvah itself, do the mitzvah personally. So it's interesting that there is a counterintuitive suggestion that's discussed in the context of Shalach Manas. There is a discussion in the Acharonim, primarily in the Tshuvas of the Binyan Tzion, Yaakov Ettinger, the Rebbe of the Shamshon Falhash, that maybe when it comes to Shalach Manas, we actually prefer, maybe even insist on, Slichus. And that's a very hard to understand idea. It's based on Iran, it's based a little bit on the Pasuk, and the phrase, Mishloach Manas Yisrael. But the idea that you'd have something that requires Shlichus is a very unusual idea, because normally we say, Kol man di'ihu lo matzi ovid, Shlichus lo matzi masis. You can't do it yourself, so you can't have somebody else do it for you either. So here to say that you have to have somebody else do it for you is usually not the way we think. And if we're talking about real Shlichus, so then you shouldn't be allowed to use a child, you shouldn't be allowed to use a non-Jewish postal agency, because none of these people are high in the mitzvah. You should have to use somebody who's actually chayiv in Shalach Manas. So here, the Achronim explain whether or not they actually hold from this chumrah in practice, but just explain what's going on. Dvar Avram has a discussion about this in his tshuvas, that we're not talking about shlichus in the sense of shlichus normally. Shlichus shvadim kamoso. Normal halachic shlichus. We mean that there should be an intermediary, there should be a mailman. There should be somebody in between. It's not the whole Chiddush HaTorah of Shluchos Shladom Kemoso, which has all these rules that you have to be able to do it yourself, and that the Shliach should be somebody who is Bar Chiyuva. Rather, we're talking about an idea that you should send the Shalach Manas with somebody else. So these posts can discuss if that idea really exists, and is it really Ma'akeh, and the general assumption is that it isn't Ma'akeh, this isn't a real necessity. Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld has a tshuva in which he explains that the idea is that presumably you're busy at home all day with this, perm, with everything else, so you'd prefer to send somebody else out to do it. So we use the phrase Mishloach Manos, because that's the more likely default position. But if you want to do it yourself, so Matovamano, we wouldn't have a problem with that. So either way, however you come out on the story, so I would have thought that this doesn't have any connection to the Manos Halevi, the Trumas Hadeshim. Whether it is that you're trying to go for the Suda, or you're trying to go to make friends, it would seem that either way, it shouldn't make a difference whether you have a Shliach or not. So I thought that until I saw the Sabbath already had a Tshuva, in which he thought it was dependent. You have to paint the picture in a little bit of extreme terms in order for it to be understood. Sabbath Rav has a tshuva in which he says, if it's about Suda, like the Trumas Hadeshim, right, it doesn't matter whether you do it yourself or you have somebody else do it, it's all the same story. But if it's about making friends or enhancing friendships, strengthening friendships, then it might make a difference. Let's say you have a friend who used to live down the block from you in Teaneck, and now he's moved to the North Pole. So he's sitting there in the North Pole for a morning, and all of a sudden, the knock on his igloo, and it's Federal Express. They have been traveling for several months to make sure to get there on Purim to bring in Shalach Manas new back in Tine. So your friend's going to be pretty impressed. He sees you clearly thought about him, and you involved other people in making sure that the Shalach Manas was sent. Now, by contrast, let's go back to the year before, when he hasn't left yet. He still lives in Teaneck, he lives down the block, and you're on your way to give your Shalach Manas to all your real friends, and you come down the stairs, and he's walking past his house, and he says, oh, you're bringing me Shalach Manas. You're like, oh, yeah, of course, here you are. So between those two cases, cannot equal the impressive. In one case, he's really going to realize that you were thinking about him. That's the case where the Federal Express man was involved. And the case where he gives him directly, turns out you weren't even really thinking about him at all. So there can be a difference as far as how impressive the gift is as to whether or not a forethought was involved, so much so to get somebody else participating. So that's how Satmar Rebbe thought, that there was perhaps, if you follow this view of the Manos HaLevi, then there could be what to be said for Davka using Yisrael. Along these lines, there's a tshuva about this, and the tshuva of the bells are dying, of the Samaikahas Gross, the tshuva of Akahashi, where he has discussion about the very common practice that we all have, about if somebody comes to your door, bring your shalach manos, so you either hide because you don't have any left, or you open the door and you give him shalach manos you have, so are you okay with that? No one's going to say you shouldn't do that, but the question is that good enough? Do you fulfill your obligation of shalach manos with that? So that seems to be the same question. Is he going to, he could take this home for his zuda, but is he going to be so impressed knowing that it only got to him when he went to your house? Unclear. That's also a discussion. Some of the times, you see that some of these discussions all work off the premise that it's got to be Manos HaLevi Trumas Hadeshin, or that's the rule, you can't deviate from that, but they come at it in the opposite directions. For example, there is a suffix in the Aruch HaShulchan about giving Shalach Manos to a child, to a katan, and the Achronim will agree, well, this is obviously dependent on the Manos HaLevi Trumas Hadeshin, but you see the way they phrase it comes out in opposite ways. Some of them say that, well, if it's about making friends, so, you know, an adult does not friends with the kids, too different, that's not about race. But if it's about Shudra, so the kid's also part of the Shudra, so it's also relevant. While others say the opposite way, oh, well, obviously this is dependent, but if it's about Reyes, so, well, you can make friends with the child, why not? But if it's about the Shudra, so the kid's not chayiv in mitzvah, he's not chayiv in the Shudra, so therefore it wouldn't make sense. So you can flip it any way you want, as long as you follow the rule that it's got to be attached to this issue somehow.
Taking trouble comes to the door.
That's also true, for sure. The Aruch HaShulchan also.
You can't control who comes to the door when you deliver shalom.
Also true.
I can see her arguing the other way, as what the Sadhguru said, was saying that perhaps if someone is making an effort to go to someone's house to deliver shalom,
it's a little more impressive. Yeah, a lot of this you could really go both ways. I also want to say a caveat here that I think for a lot of these discussions, not all of them, but at least for many of them, they may use the language you're Yotzei, you're not Yotzei. It's hard to imagine you're following the rules in Shulchan Aruch, that just, if you happen to not be totally consistent with the ideal way that one side or the other would have it, that you say you're not Yotzei. I think the terminology might be a little bit strong. I think the idea is you want to try to maximize the fulfillment based on the way you understand what the reasoning is. So that's what these discussions are about. And even though they do use this language, Yotzei, not Yotzei, I think in some of the examples, in some of the contexts, it may be a little bit strong. So the Aruch HaShulchan has a little Musar Shmuz in his Sefer where he points out that even though Purim, it's not the same kind of Yantif as the Shaman told him, the Reisha, with his Nisa Malacha. And in theory, you could go to work on Purim. So maybe you will go to work on Purim. So you might think, okay, so I'll go to work all day. I'll get up very early for a quick Megillah reading. I'll go to work all day. And I'm not going to be involved in much of anything. The Shalach Manos and the Matanos Levyonim, I'll have my family take care of that. I'll have my secretary take care of that, whatever it is. I'm not going to be so involved. He said, this is not the way to be. You have to be personally involved in these things. And the Ratzi Pesach Frank discusses this in the Kurei Kodesh, and he suggests that this is a Manos HaLevi type approach, because if you take it from a Sadeshin's perspective, so if it gets there, it gets there, what do you care whether you're involved or not? But if the idea is that you want to strengthen the bonds of friendship, well, then maybe it makes a difference that you should actually be involved. And a somewhat related point, there's a tshuva by someone who certainly had the right to follow the Mahalach of the Chasam Sofer. He was the Chasam Sofer's son, the Ksav Sofer, and his tshuvas. So they had a discussion, which is interesting. This really is an example of how you can go in opposite directions depending on if which view you take about what Rachmanis is about, he discusses something which I would not recommend, this is not the way to do things nowadays. But let's say you want to leave an anonymous Rachmanis. Again, to leave an unnamed box outside somebody's house would not be taken so well probably nowadays, but in simpler times you could raise the questions. So let's say you want to send anonymous Rachmanis. So he thought that this was dependent on this issue as well. That if the idea is you want to make friends, so he's going to know who you are. He's not going to be friends with you if he doesn't know it was you. But if the idea is that you want to help him with the Suda, so then actually it goes in the other way, because we know in the Rambam's different levels of Tzedaka, so it's considered to be an even better Tzedaka when you do it anonymously, when the person doesn't know. So here's a case where it's better or worse depending on which view you take. And there was a discussion of this also in Shavsofer's son, I think one of the descendants, the author of the Tshuva's Hisarius Tshuva, continues this discussion, and a footnote written by his son, the whole family project, this whole discussion going from Shavsofer all the way down to the footnotes in the Hisarius Tshuva. So he raises the question, what if you send it anonymously, and then a week later you call up and you say, hi, it was me. So is that good enough? So it was anonymous on Purim, but the guy got somehow, no, he didn't know who to associate it with. And then after Purim, it was clarified that it was you. So it was a discussion if you assume that it's not good enough to send it anonymously. Does it help to clarify it after Purim is already over? Interesting outgrowth of that discussion. So what's the minimum shear for Shalach Manas? So we know that we talk about sending two gifts to one person, and that's from the Pasuk, Nishloach Manos, Ish L'Reyehu, plural and singular, so fine, two gifts to one person. But does it matter how big the gifts are? Is there a shir? So you find different suggestions in the Mishnah Berurah and in the Chesed Avram. So I'm going to talk about giving a Shava Pruta, like the wedding ring's got to be worth at least a Pruta. And some say that it should be a Kezias. So those two possibilities themselves are a little bit reflective of the two issues here. The question is, what chart are we using? Are we using a Hana chart? Are we using a eating chart? So is it about impressing the person, giving him Hana, or is it about giving him what to eat? And should that be the standard? So that question itself, whether we're talking about a Kezias or talking about a Shavaputa, is perhaps legitimately connected to the issue of the Ilas Levin Tumas Hadashah. But there's another point which is apparently associated with a Manos HaLevi type perspective, and that's based on the Ritva. The Ritva says that it's the following point of seeing the paper about how Mayor Bloomberg raised his philanthropy this year, but he still fell lower on the list because there are many billionaires out there giving lots of money. So let's say I'm going to send off money to Mayor Bloomberg. So he's worth possibly $20 billion, I say $21 billion, something like that. So I'm going to send him a Hershey's Kiss with a can of Diet Pepsi. So it's not really going to make his radar screen. He's not going to even notice it's there. So the Ritva writes, that's a problem. You have a Dover Cotton, L'Asher, if you send a small item to a wealthy person, or even vice versa, if he sends that back to you, L'Asher and Me'Asher, so you're also not going to be impressed. You know what he's gave. You just read in the paper that he gave $600 million to see whatever it is. And he gives you this. You're not going to be too impressed. So this is this idea that the Ritva has that the post can quote, that if it's not befitting the status, either as a recipient or as a donor, then there's a problem there. And this seems to be a Manos HaLevi type idea, because even though it could have contributed to the Suza, but if it's not going to be significant, then perhaps you have a problem there also, because if you follow the Manos HaLevi's approach, it's not enough that you give him what to eat, you have to also impress him, you have to also make him happy. Along these lines, Yaakov Zolti had a discussion in his Mishnah Kiavich that we know the Gemara says sometimes there are times when Beis Din will get involved and will force somebody to fulfill a mitzvah, or be kofel ha-mitzvah. So should they compel the observance of Shalach Manos? So it seems to also depend, that if you believe it's basically a charitable gift, so then we do have this idea of compelling tzedaka, that people are forced to do their part for this community. But if the idea is you're trying to impress somebody, so it's not going to go over so well when you show up at his door together with the two U.S. Marshals and Beis Din holding you in handcuffs and saying, I've been ordered to give you this gift as an expression of my great love for you, so you're not really going to have such an effect. There may not be much of a value in being kofet people to do this. Along similar lines, they talk about sometimes you have a situation where you have some food in your house and you can't eat it. Let's say it's asr b'hana. For whatever reason, it's prohibited by not on the level of midrabban. But you have a friend who's not well, zechola, and zechola is allowed to eat a isr ha-drabanan, isr ha-namidrabanan. It's like, great, I'll send it to him for Shalach Manas. He's going to get it. He said, no, that's, you can't eat this. You send it to him because he's the only one who can eat it. So it could help with his suda, but is that going to be so impressive as far as Shalach Manas is concerned? So possibly not. But possibly they're not going to be so happy about that. There's a side question there, which the post can talk about tomorrow. I'm sure has a truth about it. Is that considered to be Hana? If you send it as Shalach Manas, maybe that's problematic for you. Maybe that's considered to be Hana. If he's going to thank you, he's going to be happy you sent it. So maybe he won't be so happy. So that'll get you out of that child. That's a discussion as well. Good question. It's a little complex. For our purposes right now, let's assume it exists. But there is also another reflection of how things can kind of flip around, or can kind of be subject to various interpretations depending on either view. There is a ruling the Ramah has concerning an Avel. You have an Avel in Yudbeis Chodesh, so an Avel is supposed to send Shachmanis, he's chayiv in all the mitzvos. But, says Ramah, you don't send Shachmanis to an Avel. So why not? So that's the discussion, why not? So different theories in the Achronim why you shouldn't. So some say it's because you follow Kisumas Hadesan, it's an idea of Suda, it's like a Suda Smarain. It's like you're all joined together in a big Suda. And others point out that the Ramah doesn't follow the view of the Kisumas Hadesan, where Suda he's working on a Manasseh Levi track, but it's about making friends. So they say maybe that's the issue, that it's basically a Shailah Shalom, it's a gift of Shailah Shalom, maybe it's inappropriate for that purpose. The idea of the Sudas Moraim angle may find its roots also in a slightly different approach. Sometimes you have something that happens calendarically called a Pur Mishulish, which doesn't happen this year, doesn't happen to us ever here in Teaneck, but can happen in Yerushalayim, can happen in the walled city. If you observe Purim on the 15th of Adar, so the 15th of Adar can occasionally fall out on Shabbos, the 14th never does, but the 15th can. So when that happens, so Purim basically it's broken down into a three-day extravaganza because you can't do some of the elements on Shabbos, some of the things you can, some of the things you can't, so some of them get pushed off to the day after, some of them get pushed back to the day before. So basically you have a three-day Purim, so called a Purim Mishulish, or as some posts can call it, Yemei Purim, instead of Yom Purim, it's the days of Purim because it's spread out over these 3 days, and it's a very complicated affair. It's not clear how the different mitzvahs are meant to be distributed. There's another Yehuda about this. There's a long Ramban about it. There's a lot of different positions to be taken on how the mitzvahs should be distributed. So it comes out from the Rambam that however you do it, that the Shalach Manas and the Suda should be together. So one could suggest that that's following a Trumas Hadeshan type approach, that you're going to want to have the Shalach Manas before the Suda because it's there for the purposes of the Suda. Although, alternatively, you could say that it's not really about that. I think Rabbi Shechter has been like this, and there's some other Achronim who take this Mahalo, that maybe this is really a third sheet. It's not really the Trumas Hadeshan exactly, but that maybe the idea is that the notion of Shalach Manas is that it's really after the Suda, that when you have your Suda, so you invite whoever you can invite, and the people you can invite, you send out the care packages to. You send out the special delivery packages to people who aren't at your table as kind of a way of bringing them to your table in some sense. So if that's the case, that could also give a little bit of a perspective to the issue of an Avel, that it's maybe really a Suda Smarein kind of idea that brings them in. And this is perhaps a slightly different perspective on the whole story. There is a modern practice which many people have of getting together and sending Shalach Manas as a shutfus, as a partnership. That's a discussion whether or not that accomplishes everything we want it to accomplish. And it seems, of course, that that's also connected to this issue, that if the point is that it's about the Suda, so okay, we'll have food for the Suda, but if the idea is that it's about impressing people, so you could say, I got a cracker from 600 people, and I'm not so impressed, and if it really, really does so much to me. And as far as this question of impressing versus Suda goes, so what if the Maisha can't be eaten? Well, Becky also talks about, let's say you send a chicken, and turns out afterwards the chicken was found to be treif. You sent it in good faith, you sent it thinking that it was edible, and it turns out Maisha they can't eat it. So the Suda is not going to help, but goodwill, they know you sent it in good faith, so maybe that's good enough. That was a discussion as well. Or let's say a person can't eat. Let's say a person is not sick and he's eating through intravenous. He's not eating any solid foods. He's not eating anything other than the intravenous. So can you fulfill Shach Manas with them by sending them some kind of gift, even though it may not really be relevant to the Suda's Purim? And this is perhaps a step towards another discussion that the Sfarim had. What about using Divrei Torah as Shach Manas? You come at this from a couple angles. You come at this from the angle that Divrei Torah could sometimes substitute for food. You probably heard that quote from Reb Chaim Brisker, who was presented with this possibility that maybe you could be Yosei Shalosh Shudas with Divrei Torah. And he said it's a bad idea because Divrei Torah might get refuted and might get slugged up. But you can't slug up a gefilte fish. And you know that if you eat a gefilte fish, you know that you're secure. If you say Divrei Torah, who knows? Maybe it wasn't really successful. So from that angle, you could question whether such a mahalach exists for Shalach Manas. But if you say that it's about Shalom V'Reyes, so then maybe among Talmidei Chachamim, that's a better way to strengthen the bonds of friendship by sending out Divrei Torah. So it's interesting because it would come out that Manas Halevi and the Ramah would perhaps endorse this plan. And in practice, if I'm not mistaken, both of them did this. The Sefer Manas Halevi, I believe, was written to be Shalach Manas, was sent out as Shalach Manas. And the Ramah also wrote such a Sefer, a Sefer called Mechir Yayin, in which, interesting book, he darshans the entire Megillah. It was Vayihi, the Drasha, Bimei, Drasha, Chaseris, darshans every word of the Megillah. And he sent this out, I think, as Shalach Manas as well. So, Moshe Tassim, they believe that they may do Shalach Manas, not necessarily with only food items, but also with other things as well. And this is really the whole topic that Shmuel Zedeshin was dealing with, you know, that he understands that there is a value to that, but is that what we're going for on Purim, or are we focused more on food gifts? So there's also a discussion. Many Sfarim raise the issue, why is it that we don't recite a bracha on Shalach Manas? So basically, if you ever talk about any mitzvah, why is there no bracha on it? So there are certain sources, are the standard sources, the, so to speak, the Manas Halevi and Trumas Hadeshin of the bracha issues. So the first source that's always referred to is the Rashbah. The Rashbah has a tshuva, which is a Siman Yud-Tesh, in which he talks about why certain mitzvahs don't have brachas, why certain mitzvahs do. And there he talks about tzedakah. And he says when it comes to tzedakah on this, he doesn't say exactly like this. This is the way that the Achronim understand him, is that tzedakah you shouldn't make a bracha on, because you get yourself in trouble. You make a bracha on mitzvah tzedakah, and then you'll offer it to the guy, and the guy's not going to take it. So then what do? You may have heard that joke about a brisker who was walking on there to sell, and an Arab came up and was about to kill him. An Arab pulled a knife on him. So the brisker said, okay, one second, and he made a bracha. Asher kusham sov sivanu, al kiddush Hashem. And the Arab got so freaked out, he ran away. So the brisker was chasing after him. can't do hostage. That's what the Rashbah writes. So you have this problem if you're totally on somebody else, if you need somebody else to cooperate. So it's dangerous to make a bracha because you might get left hanging. So too, says the Rashbah, the way he's understood, that if you're going to give tzedakah, so you have to forgo the bracha because who knows what's going to happen with the other party. So if that's the approach, so then some Achronim say, so how is the Ramah going to deal with it now? According to the Ramah that we started with, there's no risk, because it doesn't matter if the guy says no, so you should make a bracha. Haha. What do you say to that? So the question is not a perfect question, because there are other things that could happen. It could be that it doesn't make it to his house. It could be that It could be that it goes bad, it could be that he may throw it back in your face, but it's not so possible that that's good enough. Mechila is one thing, but as far as that counts, but if he doesn't want it at all, it's not so clear. But in any case, so the assumption is that the Rashba doesn't work for this, so what answer do you give? So source number two on the list, if you, when you talk about mitzvos and brachos, if the Rashba doesn't help, you go to the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef and help those Pesach, tells on the days, where the Beis Yosef talks about why there's no bracha on bittul chametz. Why don't we make a bracha specifically on negating chametz? And then the Beis Yosef writes that because that mitzvah takes place b'lev, and any mitzvah that takes place b'lev is not given to a bracha. It's not, we don't make a bracha on such a thing. So if the idea is that the real kiyum ha-mitzvah, shalach manis, is that it's shalom v'reish, that's something that takes place internally, so some say in such circumstances you're not gonna make a bracha. And this was at the crux of a number of other theories, for example, the Sfirei Eish, who was considered an apostle, and the Sfirei Eish writes, along the lines of what we mentioned a few minutes ago, that if you're trying to impress your friends, it's not going to work so well. When you show up at the door and you say, hi, I love you so much, I got a gift for you, hold on 1 second. Thank you, God, who forced me and compelled me and ordered me and commanded me to give this gift. It's not going to be so impressive. He's not going to really find that to be such a spontaneous gift, which is also relevant to another approach that Zachorim used, the Das Sofer, to go again to a member of the Sofer family. So the Das Sofer has a tshuva about this, in which he explains that basically the idea is, so you have the Suda, and you have Shalach Manas, and you have Matanas Levyonim. And basically they're all parts on a continuum, that really Matanas Levyonim is a more overt stuck, and Shalach Manas is really kind of less obvious stuck. And we want to blur the distinction. We don't want people to always know when they're getting charity, when they're not getting charity, how they're going to take it. So to have a bracha here and not a bracha there, we want to be able to preserve the confusion here, so to speak. So to have a bracha would undermine that. So for that reason, there's no specific bracha associated with this particular practice. I will just mention one more point, a little bit off the Darach HaJosh. There is a comment that Rav Nachum Zemba made. Rav Nachum Zemba was a tremendous, tremendous, unbelievable gong who died in the Warsaw Ghetto. And he, Rav Shlomo Warman quotes him as having made the following observation, that the Gemara says in the Maseches Megillah, on Daf Yud Beis, the Gemara raises the question, what was it about the Jews of that time? Amai nishchaivu sonehim shal Yisrael ba'oso dar klaya. Why did the Jews at that time deserve to be destroyed? What was so bad about that? So the Gemara gives two answers. One answer is that they nanyu misadaso shaloso rasha, they participated in the suda of Achashverosh, which was kosher, and yet not kosher. The food was not the problem. And that was what they deserved to be threatened for. And the other answer is Nathan Ishtachavul Atzalam, because they bowed down to the idol that Haman had walked around with. So, says Nachum Zemba, so these are the two issues. So these two things are both addressed through the two reasons we have for Shalach Manas. If the idea is that it's an inappropriate Suda, that's the problem. So how do you fix that? You fix that through an appropriate Suda, through the Suda's Perm, and Shalach Manas is meant to enhance the Suda's Perm. And if the idea is that it's a Varazar, that's a problem, so how do you fix a Varazar? It's a good question. So there is a comment that Medrash has in Parshas Tzav, that Shalom is wonderful, Shalom is great. Shabbazman, Shehem Bechabur Achash, because Baruch Hu says that when the Jews are in one unit, even if they were worshipping a Varazar, I'll be Mochavan. So if you want to know how to fix a Varazar, so you should be involved in Achdus, and that's what will fix it. So that's the other reason for Shalach Manas. And together, hopefully, between the two, we fix our problems somewhat. Just to quickly review, we spoke about the fact that we have these four mitzvahs of Purim, we all have the status of Divrei Kabbalah, which may be the status of Matan Torah, and the question of why do we have Shalach Manas, so it's relevant to the issue of Ramah, that you could be Mochel and the person is Yotze. So the Chum Sofer raised the question, is that true? So it depends what it's about. Either it's about for the Suda, like the Trumas Adashrin, it's about making friends with the Mahasha Levi. So if it's making friends with Flat Account, but if it's about the Suda, so then we can't allow Machil because the whole thing would fall apart. So the Chum Sofer said this is exaggerated, it's really one Shita, but the Maisha, everyone assumes that they have these two positions, and all the issues are relevant, like the issue of somebody who's Somech al Shulchan Acherim, say a married woman that the Chum Sofer raises, then the question of Shachmanis getting there too early, the Ramashas was no good, but the Shayf of the Shumas Adesh, if you get there too early and maybe even too late, that's because the Glover explained you could even get there after Purim and still be relevant to Shudas Purim. We never talked about the issue of Shlichas, is Shlichas necessary or not, the whole discussion, it's a different type of Shlichas, and it would seem to be not dependent on this issue, except as I already explained, sometimes when you have somebody else involved, it's a little bit more of a gesture of thoughtfulness than when you just do it directly. And then we discussed the question of giving to a cotton, how that we can assume is dependent, but how is dependent flips, and two different ways of looking at it. And the question of Archa Shulchan's Musar Shmuz about how you shouldn't be away all day and have your family take care of it. And the question of anonymous Achmanis, which seems to go in the opposite direction depending on which view you take. And then the question within that, if you assume anonymous is a problem, what if you tell them later, but they're not on Purim, does that help it or not? And then we talked about the question of the Shir for Shalachmanis, Machlokas, whether it's a Kzayas or a Pruta, and that's relevant to the whole question. And the Ritva's view that it's got to be Chashiv, that if it's too small for an Asher or from an Asher, either one is a problem, because it's not impressive, and how that could affect the question of Kfiya, do we compel? That also goes in both directions. As a result, he points out in the question of when the gift itself is not going to be impressive, let's say it's also for you and it's mutter for them, that that creates a possible silo. And the question of why an Ovel shouldn't get Shalachmanis, is it perhaps because it's a Shudas Mareim idea, like the Tumas Adesner, or is it because it's perhaps Shalach Shalom, like the Manas Halevi? And the question of the Purim Mesholish, and the view of the Rambam, that the Suda and the Shalachmanis are always going to be together, and the slightly different approach that may come out of here, that maybe the idea is to extend your Suda to other people who weren't actually there. And then we talked about the question of Shalachmanis Peshutza, so that could be affected by these two different issues. And then various scenarios where you can't eat Shalachmanis, let's say it turns out to be Treif, so let's say you can't eat at all, let's say it's not a food, let's say it's a Vitaru, and how all of that may be affected, and how the Ramah and the Maslava themselves both apparently followed this through and gave out their own farm as Shalachmanis. And we talked about the question of why is there no bracha. We talked about how the Rashba is answered by Shlokim may not apply here if you follow the Ramah. So the other possible approaches, and maybe it's a Kiyum B'Lev, like the Beis Yosef, and maybe it's going to blur the distinction between Matanos Levyanim and Shalachmanis that we don't want to do, or maybe it's going to show a certain level of Kfiya to show up there and make a bracha saying you're forced to do it. Someone mentioned by Menachem Zemba's idea, there were women quotes, that the Gemara says the two reasons why the Jews were threatened with destruction, either because of Suda Achaseris or because of Avodah Zarah, and how these two reasons that we have could perhaps parallel both ideas and hopefully bring us to a better generation where the risk of destruction is not prevalent. Okay, we'll stop there. Freilich and continuation of